welcome to the Gone Rob podcast. I'm Ben. As always, I'm joined by fellow Pokemon enthusiast Connor to bring you some of the latest and greatest Pokemon news and a few laughs along the way. This week, we're speculating on what Pokemon Works is, discussing a quote by former chief legal officer at the Pokemon Company on why they go after some fan-made games. We're also bringing you some news and speculation on Pokemon Legends Z2A. As always, you can jump to a topic using the timestamps in the description below. And Connor, happy Thursday to you.
Very happy Thursday, sir. Or happy Friday to those listening. Or whatever day it is when you end up listening to this. We release on a Friday and we just assume that everybody listens the moment this goes up.
Surely they do, right?
I have stats to prove otherwise, but...
Same. I have stats as well. It's always within the first 48 hours whenever I log into Acast. I see that big triangle, that big spike, and I'm like, okay, yeah, there are people that are at least downloading it the day off, but I never know how reliable that is because my... So I listen to podcasts via Apple Podcasts, whatever the app is, and I've just got automatic downloads on. So, of course, when a podcast gets released, of course, it's going to download it because it automatic downloads. Yep. So we know you're downloading this on a Friday or maybe a Saturday. Don't know when you're listening to it. But if you are listening to it, thank you so much for taking your time out of your day to, you know, spend it with us, of all people.
Appreciate it.
Shall we jump into the first topic? Let's do it. We're both synced up. So what is Pokemon Works? So earlier this week, it was revealed that the Pokemon Company in Japan have set up a new subsidiary called Pokemon Works. The trademark is filed and the company is being registered. We have no idea what this company is. We have no idea what it's for, what its purpose is. The only thing that I've managed to been able to dig up is courtesy of a couple of news outlets reporting that apparently it's based in the same building as Ilka, which developed BDSP. Is there a link there? I don't know. It's a very interesting dynamic, and I'm wondering how this works, because just to help me break this down, so the Pokemon Company is owned three-way by Nintendo, Creatures Inc., and Game Freak. Yeah? Yep. So that's the Pokemon franchise. But the Pokemon Company, which is also the Pokemon franchise, right? Pokemon is a franchise, but it's the Pokemon Company is owned by those three. And they've now got this subsidiary of Pokemon Works. This is a very weird looking tree diagram, isn't it?
I'm not going to pretend to know it's for tax reasons, but I feel like it's for tax reasons.
Okay, what makes you think that?
It's always for tax reasons.
Tax reasons. Yes, write something off, let's create a company, it goes over there, oh, the company goes bankrupt, but we're okay, we're the big company that's okay. So
it's interesting that it's in the same building as Ilka, because Ilka aren't really anything to do with the Pokemon Company. Now, they did do Brilliant Diamond Shining Pearl, they did do Pokemon Home, and apparently they worked on Pokemon Sleep as well, which I was aware of. So they've done some stuff. Is this now a case of the Pokemon Company going, right, we want some oversight in what you're doing with our games? Is this going to... But, you know, this isn't... Is Pokemon Works going to be partly owned by Ilka? Or is it just going to work in the same building? What's the situation? They might have nothing to do with each other. In fact, I'm pretty sure that the Pokemon Company, as it stands, or sorry, not the Pokemon Company, but Game Freak, are in the same building as like Megalith Studios and all that kind of stuff. And we know they don't really work together.
Mm. So, do you think there's any clue in the name?
Pokemon Works.
Yeah. I mean, we know it doesn't. Have you played Gen 9?
That was actually what I was going to bring up. Is it just trying to get it functioning?
Perhaps, yeah, maybe it is just a core group of staff that work there whose whole thing is to try and get the games over the line in terms of like quality control, perhaps.
I'm going to throw this out there now. I could see this being a case of Pokemon Home as a replacement. We all want Pokemon Home to carry over onto the Switch 2 at the end of the year. That's the ideal circumstance, really. But maybe it doesn't work that way.
So in, just so I'm clear, so perhaps the reasoning is, Ilka, you have developed a few things, Pokemon Home, Pokemon Sleep, and Pokemon BDSP. Let's be honest with you, all of them have had middling reception. I've been around long enough and used Pokemon Home enough to know that there are issues with how that is. There are frustrations with the fact that Pokemon Home on the Switch doesn't do everything. Pokemon Home on the mobile doesn't do everything. You kind of have to have both of them.
And neither of them are either at day one.
No. Like, is this potentially them going, Ilka, you've had three opportunities on things. None of them have hit the ground in the way that we wanted, actually. Is this a replacement service for Pokemon Home?
The thing is, we're assuming that, again, working in the same building means they're going to be working closely with Ilka. That's not necessarily true, but we're going to go off that assumption. So if they were coming up with a Home 2 for the Switch 2, for instance, would they need to be working close enough with Ilka to go, right, give me the code?
Mm-hmm.
Give me the code and give me the guys who worked on it so we know what this mess means and we can untangle it and get it working for the next thing.
Possibly. Another idea. Obviously, we know that a long time ago, last year at some point, we reported on Project Bloom, which is something that Game Freak are working on. All we have at this stage is some kind of development title, whether or not the final outcome is it's called Project Bloom. I don't think it will be. And a single deal. Is there a possibility that a set of Game Freak are working on Project Bloom, and everyone else that's working on a Pokemon game is being shifted over to Pokemon Works to create that clear distinction within Game Freak?
So as far as we know, Pokemon Z2A is a Game Freak game.
That's what the trailer leads us to believe, because it has...
It could very well be the last Game Freak game. And Game Freak could go, right, we're done now. We've outsourced full time, but we created a whole new company which we are part owner of. So the Pokemon Works could be a whole new body, get some new heads in there. Because Game Freak has been shuffling the top management for a while. But remember when we did the reading the reviews and things like that from former employees?
Oh, yes.
Apparently there's still a lot of shakeup that could be done. This could be it. This could be a case of like, okay, we hold on to the Pokemon franchise because we own part of the Pokemon company. And as long as the Pokemon company owns part of the development studio, then you bring in, game developers from Ilka, you bring in some of the game developers from Game Freak, do a big shuffle around, put some new heads in place, and then hopefully some magic comes back to the franchise.
I'm not going to lie, I would love to see that because I'm a big fan of shakeups and, trying new things. I just don't see where that would happen while keeping the Pokemon company's very strict release schedule. Because it feels like because the team, as soon as before they've even finished a game, they're already onto the next project. Like, trying to get that switch around happening at the same time feels like a management nightmare. Although, actually, thinking about it, if some of them are new, you could have them working in the background and bring people in as and when. So, actually, yeah, it could potentially work. I just don't understand why. Okay, so when you think of... Okay, Let me ask you, knowing that you are so ingrained into Pokemon that I'm probably not going to get the answer that I need from you, but I'm going to ask you, like, when you think of Pokemon, what's the company that you associate with it? Do you associate, when I'm talking about the games here, do you associate Game Freak, or do you just associate, oh, it's just Pokemon?
It's Game Freak.
But us it is, but for the majority of people, do you reckon it's just, oh, it's the new Pokemon game by Pokemon?
Yeah, probably. I don't think the name holds much weight for many people. Because you know full well, we've read so many articles now that it's like, Game Freak, the company that makes Pokemon. It has to be clarified in every single article, because people just don't know.
No.
Like, don't get me wrong, I will always remember the Game Freak logo with a star coming across the background. The
oh, yes.
You know, that's part of my childhood and is ingrained in me for the rest of my life now. But if a new logo came up, would I be mad? Do you think the average consumer knows that Pokemon Brilliant Diamond and Shining Pearl wasn't made by the same company?
No. I think the reason why is because, let's say you're not involved in that, you're not involved in the news cycle, the marketing, you aren't picking that up. You are just an average consumer. I'm thinking of people that are maybe a bit younger, and the first exposure they get is a trailer, you know. You just see it as Pokemon, and when you put in a game, no matter what the game is, or you load one up, how often do you see the opening, you know, who it's developed by, I'm trying to think of the name, the word now. You've got the company that builds it, the company that releases it, and they've got technical names.
Your developer and your distributor.
Yes. Like, you see them, and for the majority of people, they don't associate that with a company or people. They just see words on a screen, and then you're into the game.
Yeah,
so for the majority of people,
it's a Nintendo game.
Yes,
that's probably about as far as it goes for most people.
Exactly. So could they as a company go, okay, we want to move away from Game Freak, and we want something that is more in line with Pokemon. It's got that synergy of, oh, the Pokemon games are made by Pokemon Works, which is part of the Pokemon company.
So just a rebut? That's not a word. Anyway,
rebuttal,
just to jump on that.
Yeah,
I know rebuttal's a word, but what's the verb? To rebut?
I'm going to rebut you.
I'm going to rebut you on that one. Yeah, so it's not... We're not moving Pokemon away from Game Freak. I think Game Freak are moving away from Pokemon.
Yes.
I think what we saw with the Gear Project and the way we've had interviews, there was that interview a few years back where they were like, yeah, we've got Team A and Team B. Team A is not Pokemon, and Team B is still Pokemon. And then people made out that, like, oh, if they're Team B, then there must not be as many people working on it, X, Y, and Z, blah, 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 blah. Game Freak are kind of done with Pokemon, from what we can gather. That's not to say there's not passion still there. I think Legends games prove that. And I really hope that Legends Z2A is a swan song if it ends up being their last game. But I could see Game Freak going, we need to prove to ourselves that we're more than just Pokemon. We've been making the same game for 25 years now. Let's shift on. While still having their fingers very much in the pie because they own the Pokemon company.
Yeah, so for context, Game Freak have created games other than Pokemon. I always remember they did a like sideways on cartoony horse racing game alongside many others, but as a company and their staff that work there, yes, there'll be you know, a number of them that have grown up with Pokemon. They love Pokemon. They love their elements. I'd imagine there's also a number there that go, oh, I'd like to try something else. But as a company that creates games that is possibly responsible for one of the biggest gaming franchises on the world, how much time and dedication can you actually put into for what might be, for some people working there, a side project?
Yeah.
So, which lends, you know, credence to your, you know, speculation that there might be a couple that go, if we're going to if we are ever going to do something other than Pokemon, we need to completely remove ourselves from Pokemon. We can't do this half and half because it doesn't benefit anybody either. Doesn't work. So could we? So again, just leads into what you're saying. Could this be that breakaway of Game Freak deciding to just not split down the middle, but split in some way in order to realign what they want to do moving forward?
It would be nice to have a company that is solely focused on the Pokemon games. There is an element of wishful thinking here. You know, my hope is that it's one company, one team working start to finish, all hands on deck are trying to make the games as good as possible. That would be great. We obviously don't know if that's the case, though. And we won't do for a long while yet. Here's the thing, though, right? You've got 2 years till Gen 10, I reckon. I still think Gen 10 hits on the 30th anniversary.
Yes.
I can't see him releasing it a year after Legends Z2A. That seems weird. I feel like there needs to be... I mean, maybe they're setting us up now. Maybe they've gone, look, we're giving you 2 years between now and Z2A. And then there's going to be 2 years between that one and Gen 10. Would we be mad? We've been complaining about the release cycle being too fast for too long to sit here and go, oh, I need a new game, though. I need something to talk about.
I would be happy. I know there was somebody that commented on one of our recent videos that said, like, they want a Pokemon game every year because that's what they love. They love that every year. It's what they look forward to. And I can completely understand that, because as much as I moan and complain when a Pokemon game comes out and it doesn't, you know, hit the highs that I expect of Pokemon and know that it can achieve, and it frustrates me, I'm still there going, it's a new Pokemon game I get to play, isn't it? Yeah. Like, I get it. Now, increasing that length of time between games, is this part of it? I can't say. Would I be okay with that? Of course I'd be okay with that. If they move to, I don't know, Pokemon Works publishing a game every couple of years and Ilka publishing a game every couple of years, of course I'd be happy with that.
We're under the understanding as well that the extra time makes the games better as well. So they have the ability to hold your attention for longer.
Yes.
You know, that's a valid point. World we're talking about.
Yeah, yes, the games only come out every 2 years, but there's a lot more content to sink your teeth into. And for me, as a, you know, someone that doesn't get much time to play video games anymore, a Pokemon game that would take 2 years to complete, I'd be okay with that, because I don't get that much time. Other people might fly through it and be really annoyed then because they've got to wait even longer. I get both sides of the story.
But there's also, like, next generation's going to have 1,200 odd Pokemon. You're only going to get a handful of them initially, and then over the course of those 2 years, you slowly introduce more and more back into the games, hopefully for free, not just in DLC. And then, well, to be fair, the way they've been doing it up till now as well is the case of, like, even if they come out as DLC, you get them for free if you trade them in.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have this ability to play through the games again with new Pokemon. If that's what you think Pokemon is playing through the games with lots and lots of different monsters, doing it your way, especially if we're moving to a more open world, maybe they're bringing crafting back in, maybe there's some city building going on, there's other game mechanics going on, there's a post-game, God forbid, bring back...
Wait, Pokemon has post-game?
If you got 2 years to build it instead of one, or, you know, they're obviously working ahead of schedule. It's not, they don't do these every year. I think Gen 8 took like Gen 9 took like 3 years or something, 2.5 years.
Yeah, they all take set. They don't pump the. I mean, to be fair, if Scarlet and Violet came out in a like from start to finish, it was a year development time. As frustrated I was be, I would be. I'd have to give credit to Game Freak for being able to pump out a game every single year. That's not the case. Like you say, they are on a cycle. I have seen other companies do this. I think Call of Duty at one point had three developers, which each a game came out once every year, but that developer only brought out a game every 3 years.
And yeah, at one point you switched back and forth between like Modern Warfare and Black Ops were developed by two different studios, weren't they?
That was it. That was it. Yep.
So
something
can,
like that.
It can be done. I hope so. It's a good model. It works. You still keep pumping out those, you know, profit-making games. But just give them a little bit more time to actually work on them.
Agreed. Once we know more about what Pokemon Works is, we'll let you know. This could be a whole lot of nothing.
It probably will be.
Nothing.
You know it's going to be.
Probably. Yeah, it's always nice to speculate on these
things. It's their new mobile division.
Oh, it might actually be, you know, thinking about it. We've got that, what is it, Pokemon Snap trading card game or whatever it's called. Coming
yeah, but
out.
That is done. That's done by the Pokemon Company, I believe.
Right.
Which is very cool because, you know, it's actually being made. So it's information I learned about that. It's being made by the Pokemon Company, not the Pokemon Company International. Which are two separate entities, in case you didn't know.
Okay, but why the distinction? Is there a reason?
So the Pokemon Company International, I forget. The Pokemon Company effectively makes the trading card games in-house. The Pokemon Company International are effectively a distributor worldwide.
Okay.
So you're now going to have the people who are developing the cards developing the game for the cards, which is why they have the ability to make all these special art ones as well, because it's all done in-house.
Oh, okay.
And I have gone back and had a look as well, and I still stand by what I said in that initial review thing of I think it's going to be too full of microtransactions and it's going to wind me up, but the card art look amazing. The way they're demonstrating the foiling and stuff like that looks fantastic. The cards all look brilliant within the game, especially when you compare it to TCG Live.
Yeah, agreed.
So.
Okay. And speaking of TCG Live, I've hit level 50 in the season, and I'm getting bored of it, unfortunately. There's not a lot to do outside of You go up that rank, you try out different decks, that's about it. And I have had such a buggy experience in that game. I'm not the only one. I've read up on it online to the point where I'm like, oh, am I kind of done with this? But if I am, it'll be nice to have a breather between that and obviously playing this new version of the TCG whenever that comes out. You ready to move on to the next topic?
Yes, sir.
So, following last week's announcement, the Nintendo Switch emulator Yuzu had agreed to shut down and pay $2.4 million to Nintendo. A former Pokemon lawyer has explained why Nintendo goes after fan games, despite, and this is in quotes, no one likes suing fans. So, in an interview with Aftermath, Don McGowan, former chief legal officer and business affairs at the Pokemon Company has spoken. So all this is a quote. I'm just going to read it out and then we can discuss it. I would be sitting in my office minding my own business when someone from the company would send me a link to a news article, or I would stumble upon it myself. I teach entertainment law at the University of Washington and say this to my students. The worst thing on earth is when your fan project gets press because now I know about it. But that's not the end of the equation. You don't send a takedown right away. You wait to see if they get funded, such as a Kickstarter or something similar. If they get funded, that's when you engage. And then he ends the quote with, no one likes suing fans. Now, there are a couple of games that have been taken down. that I stumbled upon. And I didn't have as much time as I wanted to find out the reasons why. I did a quick search online, couldn't find any particular reasons. However, the games that I found are Pokemon Glazed, Pokemon Giratina Strikes Back, Pokemon Flora Sky, and Pokemon Stranded. Now, I did see a couple of comments saying that a few people had played Pokemon Glazed on their Game Boy Advance, so they'd actually managed to get it on a cart, which I think leads credence to the fact that no one is distributing that for free. There must be a paid element to that of, I've created this game, and it's using loads of Pokemon assets, I've put it onto a cartridge, and you now have to pay me for that. So, thinking about why Nintendo, Pokemon Company, or gaming lawyers in general go after companies, leaning back into what we discussed last week about Yuzu getting shut down because they also had a Patreon account and earning money for this, is that the common factor of these gaming lawyers, Nintendo, whoever, looking at games and going, oh yeah, it's there, but we're not going to go after all the fans until they start to make a profit off of, you know, Pokemon's IP.
So I think the most famous example is Pokemon Uranium. And
yes,
that was notoriously making money at the time. It was being sold, which is why it got shut down so heavily and so quickly. Yeah, I don't think you should be allowed to make money off fan games. I think the gold standard at the moment is still Sonic. Sonic team have come out and said, look, big fan games, crack on. We love what you guys are doing. We love what the fan base does with our IP. Some of it, obviously, they know the internet. They know they don't like all of it, but some of it. it is what it is, okay? We got to be honest. But they've basically given carte blanche to go, yeah, make all the fan games you want. You are allowed to use the Sonic name. You're allowed to use the Sonic title, whatever you like. All the assets are yours. Crack on. You're not allowed to say you're affiliated with Sega, and you're not allowed to make any money from it. Those are basically the two rules. And I think that's should be the same rules. And probably, you know, Sonic team have come out and said that. I think that's probably how lawyers see it anyway. My understanding of copyright law, obviously it's different. A lot of these companies are over in Japan. I do not pretend to know the Japanese laws at all, but copyright law in the US and the UK and things like that is a case of you have to defend it. If you have a copyright, you have to defend it. And if you don't, and you can be shown that you don't defend it, then you have no right to it anymore, which is why we saw like Disney have been done over for years and years and years going after the littlest guy because they have to defend their copyright. It's either copyright or trademark. See, now this is the difficult part. Law is weird because copyright and trademark are two different things. Anyway, I don't think you should be able to make money from it. I think that's a fair statement. I don't think everybody who's ever made a fan game does make money off it. I think there's lots of people who just do it as a sort of passion project. And, you know, those are your most dedicated fans as far as I'm concerned. Those are the people who love your game enough that they want more of it than you can provide. So they're willing to provide it. And there are so many people who get back into Pokemon. I don't think there's many people who have picked up Pokemon for the first time due to ROM hacks and things like that. But I think there's certainly the older generation who have come across a ROM hack or two via YouTube, via online discussions, Reddit, whatever the case may be, have picked it up, gone, oh, right, yeah, I forgot how much I loved Pokemon and have got back into the franchise that way. So I think there are ways that it can be beneficial to both sides, so I can understand why they hold off.
I think that if they went, and they could go all guns blazing and go, we're going to shut down every single ROM hack. But who does that benefit? Like, who does that benefit? It doesn't. Everyone loses in that scenario because the fans have then gone, well, I'm never going to make a fan-made game ever again. and I might even never play Pokemon again because of how they feel. And from Nintendo's point of view, yeah, they shut all of them down, but that doesn't stop others eventually potentially popping up. Or, again, the fans just going, I'm out. Like, I didn't create this to annoy Nintendo. I didn't create it to insult them. I didn't do it to steal from them. I did it because I have so much love for the franchise that I wanted to put my own spin on it. Like, when I look at some of the biggest fan-made games that I have seen, none of them... Sorry, there are some, but the ones that I have played are the ones where I enjoy them because they bring something that I know I'll never get in the official Pokemon games. So it fills a niche. So why would you want to go out of your way to shut down niches when, you know, we've spoken about this before. Pokemon, or the fusion one. Pokemon mm-hmm. are very unlikely to ever do that. Yes, they've touched on fusions, but they're never going to go down the route of, you know, we've got 1,200 Pokemon, you confuse them all with one another. It's a logistical nightmare. So why would they want to go after this little niche that's operating over there that isn't impacting on their sales? It isn't, you know, trying to profit off of that. I think that, you know, Sega's policy is probably the same at Nintendo, but they just don't come out and say it. It's probably an internal thing of, okay, let's just keep an eye on things. As long as they aren't seen to be, you know, outright stealing and trying to profit off of, you know, what we own, let's leave them to it. And then every now and again, like, say, they go after the ones that do try that to defend their trademark or copyright or whatever it is, IP, but also to, you know, shut down people making money. That I also agree with you, Connor. Like, while, yes, you can have these passion projects, if you're basing that off someone else's work, like, you know, just, I have seen some ROM hacks where they just take this, you know, they just take Fire Red and just edit it, update it, add things. You can't then profit off that because technically you've not started from scratch. You're using something that's already there. So I think there's definitely a balance to be had. And I kind of get that from this quote from the former legal officer that, like, they're not daft. They are very aware of what is going on. And it leans back into what you said about Sega. It almost feels like they've probably got a spreadsheet of, these are all the ROM hacks we're aware of. This is, you know, the creators. This is where it is hosted. And updates, like, are they trying to profit off it? Blah, blah, blah. And then every now and again, they dip in and just go, okay, is there anyone trying to get away with something that we don't like? Okay, let's go after them.
There was a point from a video that I watched about the Sonic franchise being effectively open season, which was a case of, for Sega, it comes down to the question of, is the brand loyalty and the good press and the fan reaction worth more than the name? And to them, it was. And to be honest, that's because Sega makes most of their money from pachinko machines. Like, they don't make money from games anymore. They just don't. It's all Japanese legalized gambling. That's where all their money is these days. So being able to throw Sonic and be like, here you go, guys. We're good people now. Don't pay attention to what's going on over there. We're good people. You like us. It was worth it to them. Whereas Nintendo have such a squeaky clean reputation already, and Pokemon is such a valuable IP, that to give it away it doesn't make sense.
No, I do agree with you there. There is a difference between the companies there, and like, there's a reason Sega got out of the hardware mm-hmm. business and just went down the you know, the traditional software route on consoles. And I think I'm just trying to wrap my head around the thinking here, and I'm just really struggling as to why there are, why would they not go after some of the ones, the, like Pokemon Showdown is a great example. Pokemon Showdown is something that is massive at this point. Whenever I do log on, it has got tens of thousands of people playing. It allows you to battle in a variety of different leagues and with a variety of different rule sets. And it does, while it doesn't look as good as, you know, Pokemon on the Switch, it allows you to play fast, it allows you to build teams, set it up however you want. And yet, why hasn't it been shut down?
Because what is it a direct competitor for that Pokemon or the Game Freak or Nintendo are already providing?
Well, the closest link is obviously the online multiplayer that's within the latest generation of games, but...
Okay, I guess, but if you want to get good at that, then, you know, eventually you have to go on to the official games in order to play at tournaments and things like that.
True.
And, you know, maybe, especially at tournaments and things, they all use Showdown. They all openly use Showdown because, weirdly enough, I think Showdown works as a way of making hacked mons less necessary, because you don't have to, you know, you can test everything and then go and build exactly what it is you need. You've done all your testing. You don't have to build every single team, which would be ridiculous to build every team needed for testing. But, you know, sometimes Showdown doesn't quite work the same way as it does in the actual games. There are some interactions that aren't quite the same just because, you know, Showdown are working backwards, basically.
Yes, they are.
They're trying to backwards engineer the whole thing. And it's great. And I think it's a fantastic service, and I'm really glad we have it. But I think Showdown did a really smart thing early on of going, we do competitive, but we do Smogon. We do singles. Mm. We don't do doubles, because that's what Pokemon does. Pokemon does doubles. We do Smogon. It's completely different. And they've separated themselves out enough.
Mm.
And, you know, there's still an argument of, like, they're using assets.
They're
still using assets, which I would have thought, you know, was enough, but I don't know. Maybe Showdown doesn't make any money. Maybe Showdown doesn't have a way to make money.
I don't think it does. I've played enough and I've never seen anything on there that's trying to get you to buy anything. So have we kind of come to the conclusion then that, you know, this quote kind of backs up what we're saying of, as long as there's a line, as long as you don't cross the line of going too hard on using their, you know, the Pokemon company's intellectual property or trying to profit off it, then you should be okay?
Yeah, I think as long as there's no money coming your way for anything Pokemon related, yeah, should be fair game. Because I know you said about somebody putting Pokemon Glazed on a cartridge.
Yes.
But I remember there was Crystal Clear, which was the open world crystal ROM hack. And the big thing about that was they didn't update any of the stats. They didn't change anything in the game, effectively. Like, they updated, so each gym leader had 18 different, or whatever it is, like, sorry, falling apart, 16 different teams, so you could fight them in any order and that kind of thing. But all the Pokemon were as were in the games. And their argument was, if you put this on a cartridge, you can trade across to an official Pokemon game. We've created it in such a way that you can officially trade across, and it will never ever get flagged as a false Pokemon.
Oof. Okay. I can explain why they then went after that.
I don't think they did. I think that's still fine.
Did they not?
No.
Oh.
I think that one's still...
I thought that's something they would have shut down. They would have, because, like, a lot of the... That Pokemon Showdown, It has no inter- despite the fact you can build teams in that, there is no way then to get those teams out of showdown into, well, sorry. No, there is. There is. I know there is, because you can basically build it, dump the boxes in showdown, open up PK Hex, dump them into PK Hex, open up a save file on a modded switch to get the Pokemon on. But let's be honest with you, the amount of legwork and knowledge that's required to do that, it's the majority of people aren't doing that, because if you do that, the chances are that your game is going to get flagged for, hold on a second, like, these Pokemon aren't legitimate. So, so that shuts down that argument. I understand why they don't go after showdown. But Crystal Clear, that just applies to me. They would.
It's just a patch, though. It's not a game. It is a patch for an official copy, quote unquote, official copy of Pokemon Crystal. So you get it from their Discord server. You download the patch. You download their tools to patch your game. And that's it.
So that's
it's
like
effectively a mod.
Red. Yes, Radical Red does the same thing. You can't just download Radical Red and play. You have to download or obtain a copy of Fire Red, and then you just apply that mod to that game. There's a few that do that,
which I think is the safer way of doing it, because then you haven't got to be like, oh, we're distributing a ROM, because there's no way to distribute a ROM legally.
Yeah. Oh, we're not the bad guys. Like, we don't own the ROM. We've just created a mod for it.
Which people can create their own ROMs from their own games and patch them, play them however they want.
Yeah.
Which I'm still an advocate for. I think once you buy a game, it's yours. You can do what you want with it.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
But, yeah, so, I think they get around it by A, not distributing ROMs, B, not making a profit.
Yeah. I think if you do that, you are more than likely okay, but obviously do not take our word for it. Speaking of the Yuzu situation, we've had a question courtesy of Chaos Dragon, who says, I wonder if these emulators had implemented a requirement to provide the barcode or serial number of the game they are emulating as proof of purchase, would the issue be eliminated? Now, we discussed this before jumping onto this, and while I think, you know, this is a good idea, you know, a good idea to get around it, I don't think with the current setup it is feasible.
Yeah. So, remember we looked over the actual laws that were broken last week and why they got sued, and it's because Yuzu implemented code that had to basically crack the games. They got around Nintendo's intended copyright protection. And that was the issue. Now, having a barcode to say, hey, I've legally bought this game, even though, let's face facts, as soon as you implement this, barcodes are just going to be sold.
Yeah, they are, actually.
They're just
going
to be sold for cheaper, or distributed online, or they're just going to be available. You're going to download a ROM and it'll have a barcode attached to it. Or you get, like, you know, when you used to crack old versions of software and you just get, oh, here's a list of 100 things, one of them will work.
Yes, I remember that.
You know, or you'll have to install a program that will basically just throw loads of them in and one of them will work eventually. So it's a cool idea. I don't think it really fixes the problem, and it certainly doesn't address the law that's actually being broken, unfortunately. I think it would be lovely to see somebody step up and be like, okay, let's put in some regulation on how emulators could work. But companies have no incentive to do that. And as such, we will only ever see regulation on how emulators can't work.
It is a shame, really, because I would love to see a version of this where, you know, there's a place for everyone in terms of you buy the game and then you can either play it on your console, or if you want something that isn't available, such as mods, for example, or randomizers or something like that will never be available on the consoles, then there's a way to play it on it. Like emulated space, that's emulated space is, oh, we just allow you to mod the things that you already own. But like you say, Carnet, like I just don't see that working because of course gaming companies and developers of consoles will just look at it as there is, we can't tell you how many people are pirating our games, but we can tell you that one is too many. And because of that, we're going to go after them. It's a real shame. And in an ideal world, I could see some version of this working. But unfortunately, we don't live in an ideal world. And I just can never see anything like this happening. And I think that the emulation space is in a really interesting period at the moment. And it's going to be, it's just going to be interesting to see what happens over the next couple of years. I've already seen a couple of alternative versions to Yuzu pop up using that original source code. But what's going to happen? Are they going to shut down? Are they going to try and make money off it? Which just feels like an instant, like they're going to get you at some point. It's just a matter of when, not if. It's just an interesting time.
We were talking before the podcast about sort of legal ways around, you know, emulation. So the, as we've said before, the best way to stop piracy is not to go after pirates, it's to make it easy to have access to the games. You know, if piracy is the harder option, people won't do it. So we were talking about how when DVDs and Blu-rays used to release a digital copy, so you bought the physical disc, you had it, and then you had a digital copy that you could watch on your computer, you could watch on your phone, because that's what a lot of people were doing. They were traveling around and they wanted it on their iPads, they wanted it on their phones so they could watch it on the train, watch it on planes and things like that. It's a valid reason to want something and wasn't necessarily something that discs could provide. So what do? We don't go after the pirates. We solve the problem that they're trying to achieve. We don't really see that anymore, but physical media is dead, and we all know that, so it is what it is. Plus, streaming kind of stepped in.
Mm.
On a similar note, though, the closest thing we've seen is the Xbox Game Pass. And I know I hype this thing up enough, but it really is the best thing to happen to gaming in the last decade, and I'll stand by that. And the reason for that is I don't own an Xbox, but I own an Xbox Game Pass. Because I can play all the games I want to play on my PC.
Mm.
So, come on. Where's my Switch Game Pass?
Yeah.
Where I can get all of the old Pokemon games. Where I can get all of the old Game Boy games and Nintendo 64 games. And all these things that you already have emulators for. Just give me the games. And I'll pay you 25 quid a month. I don't care. I will pay it because it's easier. And it's an official bit of software that I can download. And it runs all my games from it, and I can run it on my PC, I can run it on my phone, I can run it on my laptop, whatever the case may be. Great, done, take my money. Make it easy for people to do this, and people will stop pirating. It is that simple. Is there a financial issue for some people? Yes. But you're never ever going to get those people to buy your games anyway. They're not your problem.
No.
Your problem are people who can buy the games and choose not to.
The thing is, though, you say it's a financial issue, like, but for some people, like the game, like for some people that will already, so the barrier of entry for some people will be, I can only afford one console, or I've got a PC, or I've got a tablet, I can't then afford a second console. The Game Pass is a great example of where you get around that.
Yeah.
Because, like, I already own a PC. Oh, I want to play on these games. They're available on Games Pass. Oh, I don't need to go out and buy an Xbox for £400-£500. I can play them on the hardware that I've already got. So actually, you've actually made money from that person, because if it was only available on the Xbox and they can't afford the Xbox, then they're never going to buy Games Pass. But by opening that avenue up of, oh, the Games Pass is actually available on multiple pieces of hardware, like I know that you can play it on your mobile. I have seen somebody play Xbox Game Pass games on their tablet and then use the Bluetooth to connect to thingy. And like Microsoft has just kind of gone, okay, we're kind of, we're moving away from the traditional.
They lost the hardware race. They know they lost the hardware race.
But they've won the software race.
I think
so. Yes, me. They've, I think they've completely nailed that. And, you know, where is Nintendo's version of that? We discussed last week. You brought up Sony Now, is it? Or PlayStation Now?
PlayStation they've something got, or other, yeah. It's...
Something. They've got their version of it. Is it as good as Game Pass? It's not. But there is a alternative for Sony players. Where's Nintendo's? Yes, I know we've got Nintendo Switch Online, but I'll be honest with you, I can never justify paying as much as they want for an additional couple of Game Boy Color, and N64 games that I have no interest in playing whatsoever. But, like, say, bring me a version of that where I can, you know, I've got this entire suite of games. I wouldn't get that much value out of it. My daughter would, though. My daughter would play the heck out of that. And that would be value for money for me, because I'd much rather pay that once a month than every couple of months having to shell out £50 to £60 for a brand new game that will never come down in value, or will come down in value such a little amount. Like, there's a way to address your issues with piracy and emulation that will impact a lot of players, and it isn't to try and shut these things down. It's just, like you said, Connor, provide an alternative solution to the problem.
See, it's funny, because I think for a long time, you know, Nintendo games hold their value, and they always have done. And a lot of that value comes down to the thing of, well, you don't get to play these on every console. They're not available on PC and Xbox and PlayStation and PlayStation 2 and PlayStation 3 and backwards compatible on this, and they're available on the arcade version of this. No, it's available. It's an N64 game that was available on the N64, and then it had a re-release on the Wii U, which no one had. So you've got a bunch of games that are scarce, and that scarcity drives up value. And that's a really cool idea, but it's not what works in the modern world, because these are digital assets now. And I don't think, with the way the world is going, that, you know, if physical media is dying, you can't sit there and go, ah, yes, but our games are scarce. No. They're not. They're not scarce anymore. That's not an argument. You have the ability to release these games. If you're not doing it, you're at fault.
Mm. Yeah. No, I agree with that. That, you know, it goes back to that barrier of entry of, like, now, for example, if I wanted to go out and play Black and White 2.
Oh, gross.
There is no legal way that I can give my money to Game Freak to play that game. There's not.
But you can give a secondhand shop £170 for a unboxed version of it.
Which Nintendo, Game Freak, whoever, will see not a single penny of that. And that is the reason why, you know, about 10 years ago, so many of these gaming developers were implementing ways to try to prevent that, such as, you know, day one codes. So if you then sold that game on, whoever bought it secondhand wouldn't have access to that day one code. There have been ways to do it. And of course, the reason I bring that point up is that...
Which I disagree with as well. I think you should be able to sell your games, and the person who buys your games from you should have the same content. I think that's a whole different issue.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I see what you're saying.
But I think the point is that it's not just gaming and gaming companies. This is just companies in general. And they will always go after... They'll see a problem and try to implement a solution that benefits them more than the consumer. And that's where the problem is. Because, you know, in an ideal world, you know, selling secondhand games, the way you do it as a company is go, oh, you've bought a digital version of our game? Oh, okay, you don't want that anymore? Okay, you can sell it onto somebody else, and we get X proportion of the cost of you selling
that.
We
run our own digital secondhand marketplace.
Yeah. But of course, that takes effort and money, and they wouldn't see as much money as trying to force people to buy first-hand games. So, Yeah, we could go around in circles on this. I want to wrap this conversation up and move on to something that's a bit more Pokemon
final
related.
Thought,
go on.
Then. If Nintendo did come out with a Switch Game Pass, for instance, how well do you really think it would function?
Probably not very well.
The Nintendo servers are garbage and always have been.
It's and you know what
annoys me.
Could
you imagine if you were trying to stream the game as well?
Yes, it'd be an absolute nightmare. Like the amount of games that I have seen where it's advertised as this game's available on the Switch, and then you look into it and it's like, oh no, you're just streaming it from somewhere. Yeah. I've seen it for Kingdom Hearts. I've seen it for Metal Gear Solid. Two gaming franchises I adore. Two gaming franchises I would love to be able to just play in bed on a Switch. But the fact that it's not a
local
installed or I'm out. And that wasn't even the point I was going to make. The point I was going to make is because you imagine, a Nintendo Game Pass, and you open it up and it's like the shop where it's just full of just shovelware, utter rubbish that does not deserve to be on there because Nintendo is so lapsed with their rules on what can be published on their shop. Like, the amount of stuff on there I've seen that I just think, this is embarrassing. Absolutely embarrassing. So, actually, you're right, Connor. Even if they did do it, I don't think they'd do it very well.
But it'd be fine as long as they just put Gens 1 to 5 on there. I mean, you can do through 3DS. We have the emulators, guys!
Yes. Let's do
just
it.
Give it to us.
Yes.
Anywho, moving
you've
on.
If you've got a comment or question, you can reach us by leaving a comment on our podcast on YouTube, by emailing goldenrodpod@gmail.com, by leaving it on our Discord channel, or by using the hashtag goldenrodpod on Twitter. Let's move on to Pokemon Z2A news, where this week some fans have discovered, and I use the word familiar in this, but you just pointed out it's flat out the same, text appearing on a sign in Pokemon Scarlet and Violet. So the sign appears in Lavincia, and it has the same lettering as seen in the opening of the Legends Z2A trailer, or at least part of that. It has the first line. So in the Legends Z2A trailer, there's two lines made up of three words. The top line obviously says either urban redevelopment or plan, and then the bottom two say the other things. The sign in Scarlet and Violet is the same line as the top one, which is the longest one, which kind of hints to it maybe saying redevelopment.
I mean, considering that the translation underneath is urban redevelopment plan - Lumio City, and you have the top line - bottom line, it seems to imply that urban redevelopment plan is one word within the Pokemon language, and that's it.
Okay. Which makes no sense then, why this is on a sign in Scarlet and Violet. Why would a sign outside a building say, correct me if I'm wrong, urban redevelopment plan?
Well, perhaps the sign is in front of a set of buildings that is going to be the prototype for buildings that are going up around Paldea very soon. So they're like, hey, the urban redevelopment plan is this. This is what we're getting.
Okay. Perhaps. I know where I'm going with this, but there's a bit more context here. So if you talk to a nearby NPC, they will reveal that the buildings are all owned by a real estate firm called Paldea Realty. You pointed out before recording the podcast that you've got a little bit of lore on that.
We have met the CEO of Paldea Realty. She is the female who you chase around all of Paldea. We first meet her in Kitakami,
Kitakami, yeah.
I forget what they call themselves.
It's been so long since I played
the hierarchy or something. They're the stupidly rich people.
Yeah, ridiculous.
And they're all
rich,
dressed out in like Gucci gear, and for some reason it's horrendous. But we know that she's the head of Paldea Realty. That's where she makes her money. I still don't think this is Nimona's parents, and I will fight you on this topic. Anyway, so it's cool that, you know, it's outside their building. And it could mean that we could see an ancestor of this woman in Pokemon Z2A, which the Legends games are all about, the ancestors.
They are.
It's a weird ancestor to add, but hey, let's go for it. And I'll tell you what, if, and this is our big if the ancestor who ends up doing the redevelopment plan, heading it up, is the head of the realty department, has a green stripe in their hair, I will accept that I'm his parents. Until
okay,
then.
Okay.
Not happening.
No. So where I can kind of come down on this is it just them reusing something that they've already got?
I would really hope they put more thought into it than that. I'm not sure if there is someone at the Pokemon company who has developed a language. I've seen people try and dissect the alphabet and things before and come to the complete wrong conclusions about what the words could mean. So we have not as of yet deciphered this language. It seems really, really, it's too close. It would be too easy to just make up another word.
Yes.
Rather than just go, because it's not like they've lifted.
No, it's not. Asset. That's the thing. Yeah. It's really confusing because, like you say, there is no benefit to, or there is no reason for them to go, oh, we need this asset, saving time for the trailer, lift and copy that over. Because all it is a bunch of lines, basically. But I just don't see how a sign that says urban redevelopment plan makes any sense on stone tablet outside a building.
Let's not forget that that's kind of a translation. It could be that that's not what it actually says. It could be that's what it means within that context, but within a different context, it means something else.
Mm.
You know, it could be similar to, and I'm really stretching here, but like when Arabic words, as you write them longer, the words all change and things like that, and they all get condensed and things. So, I don't know. Maybe it means something different in a different context. This is the point I'm making.
Okay. Is this literally just an Easter egg? Is that all it is?
Probably.
I mean, it's a weird Easter egg to have.
I mean, it makes sense. They'll have known going into this that, you know, oh, what's our next game? Oh, it's Pokemon C2A. What are we doing in that? Oh, we're building out Lumio City. Okay, let's have a, you know, either a something to do with buildings. And, oh, right, you've got something to do with buildings. You've got a sign out there. Okay, we're going to use that sign and say it says this. Fine. It can make sense.
It just feels like a really poor Easter egg when I think about Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire. You know, there was a little Easter egg in that. I know Auras came out after, but when you go to the redeveloped, what was the name of the city? Morville City. And they've got a model of Lumios City in there because of the links between them. That's like a nice little Easter egg. Could they not have done something similar in this? It just feels like if it is an Easter egg. This is why I think I'm baffled by this. I like to see patterns in things, and I just cannot see the pattern. I can't see, like, what this, how we've arrived at this, and it's baffling me.
Because, again, if, you know, there was the connection between Paldea and Z2A was that they had a Paldean company coming over to head up.
Mm.
You know, considering that the Paldean school was what, like 800 years old or something?
You're asking the wrong person. You're
okay,
the lore guy.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's like 800 years old. So the architecture in that is fantastic. And I forget what it's based off of. Doesn't matter. It's a Spanish thing. Doesn't matter. Anyway, the point I'm making is, what if the same company that built the school, they went, we like what you've done over there. We'd like you to come in and help us rebuild our city and design Lumio's Tower. Well, okay, now we've not only got a connection between Paldea and Z2A, which we love to see mm-hmm. because it's all part of mm-hmm. the same generation. We need that generational connection. But then they introduce the head of Paldea Realty to cement that in your head of like, no, you do know this company. You do know these people.
Yeah. I'm still baffled by this. I get the point that you're making. I get that, like, Game Freak does this. Whenever they bring out a new generation, there are links with the previous generation. Sometimes recurring characters or, recurring elements. That's all I've got for this. I've not got anything else, to be quite honest with you.
It's fun. I hope it means something. I hope it means there's a connection there.
I hope there is. And what I would like to see, though, is more connections. I would like to see if more people find connections in Scarlet and Violet. So, for example, those rich people that you mentioned, maybe there's a line of dialogue that from them that people haven't picked up on. Because, of course, why would you?
Yeah, maybe they say, oh, we're off to a distant fashion show or something silly like that.
Yeah. Little hints like that that might make a bit more sense in the future. Connor, is that the end of the episode?
Is that the end of the episode?
Yeah.
Is it?
Well, yeah. Yes. I mean, for an hour.
No, you're right. We did cover everything, didn't we? I thought there was another topic, but no, that's it.
No. There's not another topic, and we've covered all the questions that we've had. But of course, if you have got a comment or question, you know how to reach us. Follow the description and the link below. Contact us. We want to hear from you, your questions, your comments, your speculation. Let us know. But that's the show for this week. If you've gotten this far, you're just a top dollar, aren't you? Of course, before you go, we'd really appreciate it if you could leave a review on the podcast platform of your choice. And if you're watching on YouTube, then please leave a like, as it really helps out our podcast.
And subscribe. We never, ever ask you to subscribe, but, like, do that too,
please. Actually, yeah. Yeah. If you're on YouTube, subscribe. Do it! Do it! And hit the bell icon. Connor, where can we find you?
You can find me on YouTube channel at Captain Fidget or on Twitter at Cap Fidget.
I'm Ben. You can find us Professor Hoenn Gaming on YouTube and Professor Hoenn on Twitter. We'll be back next Friday for another week of Pokemon podcast content.
See ya!